the response has been very solid. And I think you can say that revolutionary leadership has responded to this blow with a great deal of astuteness and clarity in what has to be done. So that's the general mood. I think, of course, some people feel traumatized by the attack. I think, you know, there were terrible explosions in the city. People were killed. I think the tally is about 150 people were assassinated in the course of this so-called surgical operation. And some people have suffered from that and are in process of healing regarding that condition. But I would say the overall sense here, of course, is just indignation, a sense of indignation. How is it that people accept, as you were saying, Mark Carney accepts, not that he's any kind of moral reference for anybody, but how is it that people accept that one can try the president of a country in outside of their country? One can just kidnap someone and take them to another country. This is an insult, as is the idea that Trump might find a place for Maria Corina in this situation.
Well, she and as we were talking about her the last time you typified her, she's known colloquially as the Grim Reaper or some cultural equivalent in Venezuela is Machado.
The Sayona, she's called. The Sayona is a spirit who brings death to people. Yeah.
Charming. Well, she was appearing on all of the American talk shows that would have her a couple days ago, Fox primarily, but also in more reputable ones too, promising a return, as she depicted it, as a triumphant return to Venezuela. How would she be received today? Is there any hope for her ambitions?
I think that she's in a very... I'm delighting in her terrible situation and the humiliation she put herself through by repackaging her Nobel Peace Prize and handing it over to Donald Trump with a nice golden frame around it. I think she's completely out of the picture politically. This happens to people in the opposition here. We had the clown Juan Guaido, who declared himself president and then became the laughingstock of everybody in Venezuela and I think much of the world. And I think Maria Corina Machado has pursued the same path. I mean, she's ridiculous, but she's also awful. She actually called for the sanctions against the country, which resulted in tens of thousands of deaths. And then she called for the invasion. I guess her dreams came true. So I think she would have a terrible reception here. There's also a law of Venezuelan politics, which may not apply to every country, which is that people who leave are despised. I mean, politicians who leave are despised. And so she now belongs to that class.
Well, she called not only for America to invade Venezuela, but also Israel. She seems to be putting out open tenders to any global miscreant rogue nation to come and interfere in the country's sovereignty. What Carney said, though, about the Maduro regime, I'm using his term, being illegitimate, I've heard that from a lot of leftists, or so-called at least, up here, that they question the legitimacy of the election. Can you clear this up, finally, that the Maduro's past elections are legitimate?
I can completely clear it up by pointing out the total bad faith of people. I think they would only question the elections because this is a global South country. They're completely falling into this neocolonial desire, these latent desires, in which they question the institutions, systematically question the institutions of a global South country. I mean, it's true there were technical failures in that election, but then both the CNE and then there was a process of judicial review, which would have passed muster if this wasn't just this. Eurocentric perspective that everything in the global South has to be put under scrutiny by the global North. Well, the global North countries have proved their undemocratic nature systematically. For example, the recent case of just naming the president of Romania because they didn't, who had won an election. I mean, so I would say that's people should ask themselves the question why they're questioning the elections here. And, you know, you say that just one question I would have for Mark Carney is, I mean, the terrific incoherence of the what people say in the global north. Actually, Trump recognized that Nicolas Maduro was a legitimate leader because he said that Maria del Carmen Machado had no respect here. I mean, so if you have two basic contenders in an election, and one side has the respect and the other side doesn't have the respect, I think that it's that he was in a way indirectly recognizing that Maduro is legitimate president of the country and certainly has popular support. So the kind of imperialist pro-colonial narrative, I think, falls apart in its own terms. This is a country that's been through an extraordinary number of electoral processes, many more than in a global north country. And then, of course, the democracy reaches beyond the elections. The democracy reaches into what we call popular democracy or protagonistic and participative democracy. So there are repeated consultation processes. People participate in their community councils and they could participate in their communes. So the shoe should be on the other foot as far as democracy is concerned.
Well, and Carney was careful, I imagine, to say the not the last election, but the previous election was illegitimate. But in the last election, we saw Machado was sort of like the puppet master of an elderly contestant that because she wasn't allowed to run because I think it was because of her participation in the attempted coup. Is that right? Against Hugo Chavez that disallowed her participation?
No, I think it was previous. She actually called people to the streets in a kind of fascist protest in the middle of the last decade. So that's why, I mean, of course, anybody would be disqualified for that in any other country. In fact, her collaborator, Leopoldo Lopez, was put in prison for doing just that, calling people to violently rise up.
And yet she was allowed to go. She was allowed during the last election to go up on stage and make speeches and everything, all with this kind of sad old sort of look like he might be actually dementing gentleman that they were putting up as a so-called candidate.
Curiously, he was not totally equal to the task. I mean, in many, so many senses, but he also, someone interviewed him and he said he was a great admirer of Hugo Chavez. So I'm sure Maria Corina he stepped out of character briefly. So the whole thing was a pretty terrible farce, their elections. And I mean, as you're pointing out, the real puppet master was her, and behind her is the United States of America. And that's what made the whole election such an important one, because it's not just a normal two-party system, but rather one party is in favor of recolonization, in favor of selling off the resources, which is what she in this amazingly terrible video interview, she was saying she would give away the country to the United States, and she put a dollar value on it. It's just amazing the level of how far people were to go. As you were pointing out, she wrote a personal letter inviting, you know, to Netanyahu. So all these evil people come together. I mean, I think we're facing a time in which fascism has emerged and fascism is in power in the United States. And this new kind of imperialism is, of course, they would call it America First imperialism, but it's essentially a fascist imperialism with a more directly colonial, a more immediately colonial character than we've ever seen before. And I say colonial in two senses. One is the sense that they can put and remove leaderships, but also this colonial control over resources. They feel the resources of the world belong to them. And it, of course, doesn't just affect Venezuela. As you know, Canada's been threatened. Greenland's immediately being threatened. Mm-hmm. Panama was threatened. And they responded in a servile way. But then recently, Mexico and Colombia are being threatened. And I think the next country to come under that may face U.S. aggressions is Cuba.
Yeah. Well, certainly the people of Minnesota and the other blue states would recognize the fascism as being more immediate as they are seeing their fellow citizens being gunned down and brutalized in many different ways right now. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Chris Gilbert. Chris is a professor of political studies at the Universidad Bolivariana de Venezuela in Caracas. He's too an author and contributing editor at Monthly Review and co-hosts the Marxist educational program Escuela de Cuatro's. His latest book is Commune or Nothing, Venezuela's Communal Movement and Its Socialist Project. I don't want to talk too much about Machado here, but the images, not only of her pitch to corporate America, her shining-eyed pitch to please come and rape my country, but the whole spectacle of her handing over her Nobel Prize to Trump and he receiving it was the most cringeworthy spectacle I think I've ever seen. But okay, so those guys we can put to bed, hopefully. Maduro is languishing yet in prison. Gustavo Petro, another of Trump's least favorite presidents, is due to visit Washington next month. The Bloomberg had a headline yesterday saying something to the effect that Petro was calling for Maduro to be returned to Venezuela to face trial in Venezuela. It was a peculiar headline, I thought, and they're behind a paywall that I won't pay. So I don't know what the essence of the article was from there. Have you heard anything about Petro making such a claim in the Spanish press or anywhere else?
Yeah, I had the unfortunate experience of listening to the clip yesterday, and I have to say that Petro is all over the place politically. As I said in the last program with you, I was, of course, anyone who's seen how Colombian politics has been dominated by an extreme right, an oligarchical right wing for 200 years, has to welcome the presence of Petro in the presidency there. But he's all over the place politically, and he says these outstandingly things that really are should cause indignation in me and I think other people. He said in the same, I think he also he got caught up in his own words. He made a mistake comparing, and then he started to compare Trump and Maduro. This is completely, I think that if he had any decency, he would apologize directly for making that kind of error. And even suggesting that Nicolas Maduro should be tried, I really think this is a terrible, let's hope it's just an outlier in his discourse, because in some cases he's shown dignity, he's defended Venezuela, but this was certainly a huge political error on his part. You know, one thing I think that the U.S. attacks on Venezuela really show is Venezuela is the most radical country with apart from Cuba in the hemisphere, and then you have countries that are kind of progressive, pink tide, second wave pink tide countries like Colombia or Mexico, and though the Mexican process has its own dynamics. But these are countries where, in some ways, Petro or Sheinbaum are politicians who, like politicians in the global north, survey the territory and see where they can, see where they can go given their constituency in a very pragmatic way. So they're pulled in different directions. And in the case of Sheinbaum, unfortunately, we saw how she seems to be willing to cut off oil supplies to Cuba under Trump's pressure. So I think there's a real need for us in Latin America and people in the world. These people they should be ours, and they should be considered on our side of the fence, but they also need to be pressured from below and criticized when they make errors. And I don't mean purely vocal criticism. I think the most important thing that people in Mexico and Colombia can do on the left is show their force, show that it's not going against the government, but demonstrating that they are a political force, that they are in favor of they're in favor of Latin American integration and solidarity. Those are the most meaningful gestures in this kind of situation.
Well, it's a delicate tightrope that they're all of these leaders are on, and I think maybe that's what Carney was hinting at, though I don't want to credit him too much. But the same is true for Delcy Rodriguez. Venezuela inked oil deals with the Trump administration or regime, I guess I should say, in their own argot. There's talk that this is just a signal that the Trump invasion was successful and that Rodriguez is a puppet serving the American invaders. Can you disabuse people up here that would promulgate that message?
Well, the first thing I want to say is that first thing I want to say is that they invaded this country, kidnapped the president, partly because they didn't have a lot of options left. They proved themselves unable to do a color revolution, which is one of their favorite tactics. The country proved it was unable. They couldn't break it with a blockade. In fact, it was beginning to have an economic recovery. And then they're actually afraid to invade it outright because people would resist here, the army would resist. So they did what they could. So they kidnapped the president. But let's think about look at the earlier policies of what was going on. In the whole time, this is a country that's been under blockade, and it's historically under all of Chavez's presidency and on the first part of Nicolas Maduro's presidency, what it did was sell oil to the United States. And then it couldn't do that because of the blockade. So there's always been the aspiration to sell oil to the United States in of course, in a sovereign condition and without imperialist impositions, but between equals as a commercial sale. Then there's the other thing, which is that Nicolas Maduro, if people remember, just weeks before, has been saying that he was open to negotiations about the oil thing. And he always actually, in fact, held out the idea that he would adapt the hydrocarbon law, the law about hydrocarbons, to allow for different kinds of concessions, more generous concessions. So this is a country, this is part of the revolution has always been negotiation. Now, one shouldn't forget that it's negotiation under pressure, not only pressure, the military pressure, but also the blockade, which has turned into a direct blockade of seizing oil tankers. You know, in the history, I think people, when they think about a revolution, maybe they think of just storming the Winter Palace or whatever, but revolutions have always had to manage situations of compromise. When they hold a gun to your head, you know, Lenin said when he made the peace with Germany that he had no, they were holding a gun to his head, and it was like a money or left, not to his head, but to the head of the Russian people. And so they had to make a concession. So making a concession, making a tactical retreat has always been part of the revolutionary repertoire. And I think that's what Delcy Rodriguez is doing. In fact, the whole idea that she's a traitor is pretty much belied. I mean, you can give the lie to that very simply because Marco Rubio keeps threatening her. If he didn't go on threatening her, saying that, you know, she would face the same fate of Maduro, then obviously there wouldn't be a need, if she was a collaborator, willing collaborator, that he wouldn't need to go in that direction.
Well, there's even reports, Chris, that on the day of when the invasion happened on earlier this month, the 3rd, I believe it was, that she received phone calls, she and other cabinet ministers, as the Maduro raid was underway, phone calls saying that if she, you know, didn't go along with what the diktats of the invaders at the moment, that she had 15 minutes to survive or something to this effect. Is there any merit in these reports in English up here going around right now?
No, those reports are real. It's funny that The Guardian has really become a very, I think, a direct portal for the CIA regarding Venezuela. I mean, sending out information that they trying to destabilize the process and trying to sow doubt among people here. But to say, so the Guardian presented, they said there had been a leak. There had been a leaked call. Now that call was completely public. It was done by the communications minister, Freddy Nanez, before lots of influencers. I don't know what sense it constitutes a leak, in which she was explaining what had happened. Mm-hmm. So the Guardian decides to be sensationalist. It's like some kind of yellow journalism, I guess, trying to get new clicks by saying they had leaked information. No, Delcy simply said that was the case, and I have every reason to believe it is the case. What I think people, I think well, one thing in these 3.5 weeks, I've had plenty of opportunities to think about how people digest news. And I think one thing that people consistently want is a simple, you know, they want to, they fall into conspiracy theories, and they want to have some simple explanation for things. I think things are exactly as they seem here. Things are exactly as they seem, but they're very complex. So we've received a blow. They had a military victory, a limited military victory against us. However, the revolution did recompose itself, and now it faces a complex scenario in which the United States is still holding a gun to its head. However, the revolution has proven itself solid, both in the leadership, in the army, and in the people's, the popular support it has. But there will be a lot of challenges it faces in the upcoming months and years, particularly how to navigate this new situation where essentially the blockade goes on because the U.S. has broken the sales of oils to China, principally, and all the sales will go through, I think, some handling company in Qatar and then be redistributed partly to Venezuela.
Well, that seems like the death blow to me, that they've circumvented Venezuela's avenue for whatever recovery that they were undergoing through China and Russia, too, to a lesser degree.
Well, yeah, I think the question, I think the real challenge is faced with this complex situation, which isn't betrayal, but rather a revolution trying to recompose itself with many assets. And I've highlighted some of those assets, the key one being the ties to the people, is that over, and this, we've been through a very difficult situation before. I was here in the middle of the last decade. I've been here for 20 years, but the middle of the last decade around 2016 was an extremely difficult period here. And the, both the leadership and the popular movement proved themselves capable of each contributing different elements to the overcoming the situation. So I do think we're facing a very challenging situation. And I think we also will need a combined response. Delcy, from the beginning, you know, she said her first words were in the phase of armed struggle, the people's war, but she also put an emphasis on diplomacy. And I think that now the diplomacy card is on the table, and of course that's essentially her role, and it's the role of her cabinet to emphasize negotiations and diplomacy. But I also think there will be an opportunity in the upcoming months and year for the popular movement again to show its revolutionary caliber, its capacity to, as it did in the middle of the last decade, the communes show their abilities to produce, show their ability to contribute politically. And through support, political democratic support, they show their ability to open up the socialist horizon again. So I think we may be facing a scenario where we also will need that kind of combined response with diplomacy from the government, and it's shown itself completely capable of that. But we also will need the popular movement to come to the streets to take leadership, even in questions. And I've already seen this in these days, to take leadership in questions like even the campaign to bring Nicolas Maduro and Cilia back. Because, for example, yesterday I was in the commune, El Panal commune, and there was a spontaneous kind of festival in the middle of a square with balloons and flags, and they were collecting cards, letters for Nicolas Maduro and Cilia. This shows, of course, that this is real authentic support, because it was not done, it was simply done by people in the community. And this kind of, in a commune, and this kind of actions, concrete actions, can show that the can be a demonstration of force of the popular movement, and can guarantee that a revolution will go forward.
Well, that's something entirely alien, I would argue, up here, that the people would spontaneously come out in support of a political leader. It just doesn't happen up here. In our last minute here, Chris, you mentioned Cuba. So what about the Venezuelan exports of oil, largely, I guess it was the arrangements made initially by Hugo Chavez was not charity, but, you know, different, off the books. And you said that Claudia Sheinbaum had signaled a willingness to stop Mexican oil exports to Cuba, which I find strange, because I read something that said exactly the opposite, that she had, you know, determined that she would, no matter what the Americans said, and it was a source of some friction, is the way I read but I can't remember the article entirely. So firstly, though, will the Venezuelan energy exports to Cuba continue in any way? Is it possible?
This is very difficult, because I think the first ship they seized, they've been seizing oil tankers. The first ship they actually seized and expropriated the oil from us was a ship that was destined to Cuba. So I think that's part of their aims. You know, I don't think this is for now, this is not a significant, you know, Trump and his sycophants are celebrating their victory, but it's really a very limited, and I would say, I hope, Pyrrhic victory against Venezuela. And it's been clear that the economic victory is a very limited one, because the oil price is low. Trump had the embarrassment of confronting oil executives and all of them saying they didn't want to invest in Venezuela. The oil price really doesn't lend itself to that. And I saw a meeting of the Atlantic Council, which I can't say is a very wholesome experience, in which they were talking about Venezuela's oil reserves or oil situation. And they were all very skeptical about how the importance of recovering it and whether there could be investment here. So I don't think they've scored a big economic victory in any sense, but I do, in a political sense, yes, they want to strangle Cuba. But they're afraid of Cuba too. They're afraid of Cuba in a military sense. They, you know, 32 Cuban internationalists died all here fighting, and their whole operation seems to have been delayed. The U.S. operation called Absolute Resolve. I don't know what kind of poet in residence they have, but the Absolute Resolve seems to, operation seems to have been delayed by about 2 hours, probably because the Cubans gave them a firefight they never imagined could happen. So I think the U.S. is afraid to, of course, invade Cuba, and they've always been afraid to do it.
Well, they haven't admitted any losses, although I did see a small article that did concede that one of the helicopters was hit, and presumably there was casualties on board that helicopter. But that information, at least as far as I know, hasn't been fleshed out, so to say.
Yeah, that's part of the narrative they probably want to hush out. But I do think they want to strangle Cuba with oil. And I think that's a big opportunity for internationalists to come forward. I mean, all of us own a huge debt to the Cuban Revolution in so many senses, if nothing else, just for the example they've given. So I would like to see people come forward and in countries around the world to protest against this ratcheting up of pressure against Cuba.
And finally, then Sheinbaum. Then I'm confused. What's the Mexican position then vis-a-vis oil exports to Cuba right now?
Historically, Mexico has been very dignified, and they have this Estrada Doctrine that allows them to. They always say they'll maintain diplomatic relations with everybody, and they've always been very supportive of Cuba. In fact, the grandma which liberated Cuba, Fidel Castro, and the 26th of July movement. So they left Mexico.
The name of the boat, the Grandma. That's significant, right?
Yeah. Well, it's called Grandma because it actually had that name previously, but that Mexico and Lázaro Cárdenas at the time has always been supportive of the Cuban Revolution, and Mexico has generally acted in a very dignified manner. This was a news story yesterday in which he seemed to be ceding to Trump's demands to not export oil to Cuba, which indeed would be sad news if she goes through with it.
Mm. And is that on the strength that the Americans would intercept any tankers leaving Mexican ports bound for Cuba?
I think it's another kind of threat that the Trump regime is applying against Mexico. I don't think they've threatened directly to seize tankers, but I think there's perhaps a combination of economic threats.
Well, with neighbors... Yeah. Sorry, Chris. With neighbors like this, I mean, you do need high fences, as the saying goes, and Canadians can certainly empathize with that. And the three-way trade deal is coming up due for renewal soon, in coming months, I believe it is, between Canada, Mexico, and the United States. And that should be a source of more interest. Chris, we're fast out of time. Thanks a lot for coming on the show and giving us the benefit of your insight from Caracas.
Well, happy to be here. There's one thing I could conclude with. I'd like to say that, as we were saying before, that there's a clearly fascist manifestation of an emergence of fascism. In fact, fascism is governing the United States, and people have seen what's happened in Minneapolis. People should recognize that this is recognize fascism for what it is. It also gives them a window on how people in third world countries have been treated by imperialist countries like the United States for a long time. So what people in Minneapolis have seen in these days, this essentially Gestapo-like aggression against them, has kind of been our bread of what we've lived throughout much of Latin American history, through coup d'etats, through Contras, through death squads. All of it backed by the United States. So this is an opportunity for people in their consciousness to bridge what they're experiencing at home, if their home is Minneapolis or other cities of the United States, where ICE is killing them, harassing them. They can now sympathize and understand the need to ally with us in our anti-imperialist struggle.
Yeah, not just Latin America, too. Just for out of curiosity's sake, Chris, you're American. Which state do you hail from?
I was actually born in Virginia, but I've lived in a lot of different states, and I spent a lot of my life in West Africa. That's another story.
It is indeed, and a fascinating one, I'm certain. Thanks a lot again, Chris, for coming on, and thanks go out too to Jeremy Kuzmarov over there at covertactionmagazine.com. Their winter fundraiser is going on. They need support. All the leftist efforts do go and support them. Thanks again, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Cuba, the DR, and the Congo. Yeah, where did Lumumba go? Invading a sovereign nation soil in another war for oil. It's a long North American tradition. Crimes of imperial sedition, justified by democratic senators, Woodrow Wilson's very progenitors. If you dare to resist the eagle's claw, you can forget all about international law, because the conventions mean as little to them as they do to the European Union.